and do the work, come home to your family and your loved ones, because this is what life's about. Mm. And I want to say one thing. My mom just had surgery. I love you, Mom. Thanks for everything you've done for me. I hope you get better.
Thank you, Ray Shepherd and Alan Burnett of The Prison Way. We're so grateful. And thank you so much for joining us for this morning's segment of Think Outside the Cage. Have a beautiful Sunday.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Support comes from The Soraya, presenting the return of the iconoclastic Chicano performance troupe, Culture Clash. On May 4th, their all-new show, May the 40th Be With You, serves up an explosive cocktail of humor and satirical outrage that dares you not to laugh out loud. California natives Richard Montoya, Rick Salinas, and Herbert Siguenza have profoundly explored the evolution of Latinx culture on stages and screens for four decades. More information and tickets at thesoraya.org and kpfk.org.
This is Nick, host of Bike Talk Online at KPFK since 2008. I used to have a car. But you don't need a car to get around L.A. And we talk about that every episode.
Just do it!
I donated my car to KPFK, called 877-KPFK-AUTO. They took it away. Tax deduction. Anyone can have their car taken away. Cars, boats, motorcycles, any fossil fuel vehicle. Leaf blowers, not a vehicle. Call 877-KPFK-AUTO. Donate your car to KPFK. Help the station. And commute by bike. There's no traffic on a bike.
Hello, this is Martin Sheen, and you're listening to KPFK, 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara.
Welcome to Beneath the Surface. I'm Susie Wiseman. On today's program, we spend the hour with Haitian author, historian, filmmaker, and publisher Frantz Voltaire, who helps us untangle the continuing chaotic situation in Haiti after the unelected Prime Minister Ariel Henry has agreed to step down in the face of an alliance of armed gangs who have taken control of the capital, closed the airports, and opened the prisons. No government is in charge, and the power vacuum has been exacerbated by the almost complete withdrawal of the police force, while police stations have been burnt and violent offenders are out of prison. Armed groups have terrorized the population, murders, kidnapping, and rapes have more than doubled, and food imports through the ports are in chaos, threatening mass hunger and famine. Efforts by neighboring countries in CARICOM to create a transitional presidential council got off to a rocky start when no Haitians were at the table to decide on Haiti's future. That has been remedied, but whether anything effective can be produced is still in question. We'll get Frantz Voltaire's analysis of what has happened, what's next, and what could be. All this when our program returns in just a moment. Welcome to Beneath the Surface. I'm Susie Wiseman, and very pleased to have Frantz Voltaire back with us. We're going to be covering the ongoing political crisis in Haiti. We last spoke with Frantz after the assassination of Haitian President Jovenel Moïse in July of 2021, asking then what it portends for Haiti. And now Haiti has descended into, I guess we could only say, a new hell. After 2 years plus of dysfunction, not to mention the pandemic, and stasis at the top under Prime Minister Ariel Henry, while armed groups took control of the streets, terrorizing the population, and they now control the airport, have opened the prisons, and are effectively in control of the capital of Port-au-Prince. And in the midst of this political upheaval and the unification into an alliance of the armed groups, Prime Minister Henry has agreed to step down while neighboring countries are scrambling to create a transitional council to run the country. We're going to get France's account and analysis of where Haiti is now and what can possibly happen in this country that is beleaguered by catastrophic natural and political earthquakes. So, France, welcome back to the show. Let me just properly introduce you. France Voltaire is an award-winning filmmaker, historian, author, and publisher. He's the founder and director of the Montreal-based CIDICA, which is the International Center for Haitian, Canadian, and Afro-Caribbean Culture. His books include Black Power in Haiti, A Brief History of Blacks in Canada, and probably others I don't know about. France has served as a consultant to the United Nations and was appointed by President René Préval to coordinate the international cooperation between Canadian and Haitian organizations. France has also served as a consultant to the UN and as a cabinet chief for the Prime Minister Robert Malval of Haiti in 93 and 94. And before that, France spent time in a Haitian prison, and even before that in the notorious stadium after the 1973 coup in Chile. So that's quite a lot of a biography, and I just really want to welcome you back, France. And maybe just ask you first to update us. When we last spoke, as I mentioned, in 2021, the president had been assassinated by Colombians, and today Haiti is being called a failed state with no government in charge, armed groups in controls of the streets and the airport, and efforts I mentioned just previously to create a transitional presidential council have gone nowhere, or had gone nowhere when it appeared to repeat all the past failures, meaning that the council sponsored by CARICOM was deciding Haiti's future without Haitians at the table. Now there's some Haitians at the table. But it seems to me, and I'm going to ask you to maybe start with that, is what changed everything and forced the resignation of the ineffective Prime Minister, Henri. And what I mean by that is the gangs have united, creating an alliance called Living Together. So can you lead us to where we are, take us through the steps, and then describe it, the situation?
I think, Susie, to understand the problem of Haiti today, we have to remember 2010, when we have this earthquake with more than maybe 300,000 dead and a lot of people get injured. I think when they decide to give, at the time, Bill Clinton, they name it at the head of the commission to rebuild Haiti. And this was a disaster. Disaster in the sense that everybody thinks that the president of the United States in charge of the small country will help rebuild the country, will help building institution, but it didn't happen like that. We don't know what happened with the money. We don't have any audit of the resources that the global community put to rebuild Haiti. Secondly, there was a book by a Haitian scholar, Jean-Marie Bourjolie, who analyzed the commission and how they give a lot of money, the mismanagement, and finally, the Clinton decide to name, and I said to name because in the Electoral Council at the time, they named Michel Martelly, a drug dealer, an incompetent guy, as the president. And in the time we have, I remember a scholar, Mr. Satan Fuss. Mr. Satan Fuss, Ricardo, we published a book with Ricardo Satan Fuss, and even this book was published in Haiti, about the incompetence on naming Michel Martelly president. And Satan Fuss was, at that time, an administrative representative of the OAS, and he decided to quit. He left and he wrote a lot of books on Haiti. And I remember at the time, when he said that the Electoral Council decide to name Michel Martelly. And even the president of the Electoral Council said, they give me the order to name Martelly. And Satan Foote decide to leave the OAS. He's teaching right now in Brazil. And in this sense, Michel Martelly used to define himself as a legal bandit. You know, you can go, anyone can go on YouTube. You can see what he was saying. He was a misogynist. He was incompetent. And he was robber baron. And they stole all the money from the Petrocaribe project. We are talking about $4 billion. With a debt, it was not a grant. It was a debt that Haiti has to repay. And we began to enter in a situation where you have the support by the state of gangs in Port-au-Prince, essentially. You have certainly other gangs in other regions of the country like Artibonite, but mostly the gangs are in Port-au-Prince and they control all over the city. Today, we are talking about 80% of the city is under control of the gangs. They don't reinforce the police force. And so after Michel Martelly, when he became a liability, the American embassy put pressure on him and he has to leave. And we enter on some kind of vicious circle where they control the transitional process with Jovenel Privert. After that, the election of Jovenel Moïse was organized by United States. And when we talk about Jovenel Moïse, we are thinking that there were less than 500 people who vote for him. That means that he has less vote than a senator in Port-au-Prince. And so the problem with Jovenel Moïse was the assassination. And 2 days before he died, he named Ariel Henry. A lot of people used to say there is allegation that Ariel Henry was, I don't know how he was involved, but that he was involved in the crime. And at the time, Hélène Lalime was an U.S. ambassador and was responsible for the core group. The core group is the representative of France, Spain, European Union, Canada, and United States. And with a tweet, she said, okay, Ariel Henry is the new prime minister. And certainly, Ariel Henry was linked politically with some gangs at the beginning, and they support the gang. Certainly part of the economic elite was also supporting in some way the gangs. The problem that the people said Haiti, at the difference of Iraq, at the difference of Libya, doesn't produce arms. There are not arsenals in Haiti. There was not ammunition where they come from. And we know that all this armament, they came from Miami Port, essentially, or Dominican Republic, secondary. And so people are asking if the United States want to stop the guns who arrive in Haiti, they can stop them in the Miami port. Because in the same time, the police force, national police force, has an embargo on arms. And so they were less armed than the gangs. And Mrs. Lalime was responsible for what she said, we need to unify the gangs to negotiate with them. All this information are public information. It's not a conspiracy theory. And so Ariel Henry became a liability. Yeah. because I don't think since François Duvalier, anyone was as so terrible people image for the Haitian public, because he didn't do nothing. He traveled a lot. Certainly, they have utilization of the money. I don't know. There is allegation, but I don't know. But in fact, what people think that when he was invited to go to Kenya, because this Kenyan thing, it's a very strange thing. Yeah. In a country with gang, you want to send policemen. This is
and policemen that speak a different language, I might add.
And so they don't speak French, they don't speak Creole, and as a policeman, they don't have the logistic to go to Haiti. They depend on certainly on the American logistic. I don't know how they can. They don't have planes, long range plane. They don't have armament. If you have 1,000 people, you have to organize the presence in Haiti, and so it's a very strange situation. Some people think that because United States today are confronted with some problems like the electoral process, with a remake of the last election between Trump and Biden, because they have two major wars between Israel and Palestine and Iraq, Russia. They don't want to get involved during the election time in other conflict, because it's uncertainly the Biden administration will have the responsibility to get involved. And so they try to invent, this is an improvisation in my sense, to have this type of situation. Now, Henry, as he became a liability, you have to push Henry out. That's very strange. Henry left to Kenya. And from Kenya, it's a private plane. He want to go to Port-au-Prince. 2 days before, the gangs limit the access to the airport. And so the Dominican Republic and President Abinader, they said, okay, they don't want to receive Ariel, and he has to go to Puerto Rico. And so it's the situation is a very, very strange. Now, I think they can put pressure on Henry to sign his resignation. Now, the meeting in Kingston, you don't have any Haitian in this meeting.
Right.
This is a decision that, okay, you organize something like a presidential commission. This is a very strange seven people with the right to vote, two other people representative of the civil society in the commission, but you don't know who will decide that who will be there in this commission. And in fact, you know that 4 days after this commission, they have discrepancies between them. They can't meet. And so this commission has three mandates: deciding who will be the next prime minister. Secondly, accept an international mission, military police mission in Haiti. And third, they don't have to get involved in the electoral process.
Can I interject just now, because you've given us so much information, and you've gotten to the point where there is this, I guess, CARICOM regional trading bloc that is guiding this transitional presidential council. And as you say, in the beginning, it excluded Haitians, which, you know, is a mockery. The last time we spoke, you talked about, you know, essentially a kind of self-determination for Haitians. They have to be involved in the process. They have to run the process. But nonetheless, after there was a lot of bickering about that from Haitian groups. They have now invited, as far as I understand, the Montana Accord Group, which is a grassroots coalition created in the wake of the Moise murder, to promote a Haitian solution to the crisis. But also, and this is important because political formations have also been invited that just name them, the names you just meant, including former prime ministers Claude Joseph, Aristide, Michel Martelly, and members of the private sector. This was all in the Los Angeles Times on Friday. You've just said that, you know, these are discredited and some of them, you know, criminal. So, but we have this group called the Montana Accords with their representation. And I guess the question is, is this the model? Is this what is needed? Will it help? Is it just a modification of what's gone on before? How do you see that?
Listen, when we talk about the Montana Group, mm-hmm. Montana Group was some kind of political aggregation of more than hundreds of civil society organization, political, small political movement, but when they began the negotiation with the international community, and when I'm talking about international community, essentially I'm talking about United States, because Canada participated in that, but essentially that's the position of the United States. They used to say to the Montana Group, we don't want 2 years process. You have to organize an electoral process immediately. And the people said, oh, we can organize an electoral process with the security problem, with the human rights situation, with the economic catastrophe. We need to organize and reinforce some institution before organizing electoral. They said, no, we want election immediately. But in the same time, they support Ariel Henry government. Or Ariel Henry government, Ariel Henry was on his third year. Anyone was elected in this government. There was no mayor. There was no major. There was no one, no Congress. And so the people said, okay, why you support Ariel Henry? Because I suppose you criticize for one side, Venezuelan government, but in the same time, you support someone who, since François Duvalier, there is no one who accumulates so much power in his hands. Ariel Henry made what he wants. And so you don't reinforce the institution. And we are going nowhere. But even Ariel Henry didn't organize any electoral process for the last 2 years. And Ariel Henry, the last time before he left Haiti, he said, yes, we will have election in 2025. That means that Ariel Henry will be, from 2010 to today, the only one who will have a complete mandate. Because he's the same time, he's the president, he's the prime minister.
He's both? I didn't realize that.
The guy who named everybody in power in Haiti. And I remember before she left, Madame Lalime, she invented an institution that was three people who were in fact in charge of to look at Henry government, but they don't have any place to even to stay. And so the international community has supported Ariel Henry, and they have a problem with Ariel Henry with all the mass movement in Haiti. Ariel Henry was criticized from every part. If the gang the last months began to criticize Ariel Henry, it's for two reasons. One, they thought if you have a military or political or policeman mission in Haiti, that will affect their power base. Secondly, they try to present themselves as a political movement. And when the United States expelled, after 7 years in jail, Guy Philippe.
Yeah.
And we know that Guy Philippe was on the same time and informed. And Guy Philippe arrives in Haiti and he presents himself as a revolutionary who want to change the system. And he has the BESAP. BESAP was a militia organized by the last president, Jovenel Moïse. And they have confrontation with the police force. And he said, I want to be president. And so Guy Philippe trying to make alliance with other, with the gangs. He said, okay, if I become president, I will proclaim a general amnesty. And so, but the gang has also their own agenda. People, they want to maintain the control they have on their territory because they are organized in each slums. They have their own agenda with the drug profit, with kidnapping. And so, and even for the last 15 days, they said, okay, we proclaim our unity. I think it's very, this unity is what it was organizing the liberation of 3,000 prisoners. They attacked the two men jail, and you have 3,000 people who are now reinforcing the gang. But most of that, mostly, one question we have to ask, how people find ammunition? I understand, okay, they buy guns, but you know, Haiti didn't produce munition. We don't, and so you have to buy someplace. And we know that they buy it in the States. Right. And so if the United States want to intervene, the first thing it's not to send troops. The first thing it's made a blockade on arms and munition leaving to Haiti.
Okay, go ahead.
Secondly, they have to, I talked to the Canadian authorities. I said, if you reinforce the police force in Haiti, certainly it will be effective to control the gang. And so there is one or two or three measures they have to take, but it's not the road they have chosen.
Can we go back now? Because you've again, Franz Valtier, thank you so much for all of that. We're hearing more about, Jimmy Barbecue Cherizier as, you know, he used to be an elite police officer. Now he's a self-styled revolutionary who says he's fighting the elite. And he seems to be in charge of, at least as you say, one part. And then there's Guy Philippe, who you've mentioned, another policeman. And so I was going to ask you to kind of describe the social forces on the ground. These are the main two that we hear about here as, you know, running the streets, who have opened up the prisons. But we also know, and you've just kind of clarified it, because they're armed and there's been tremendous violence with, I think, 5,000 civilians murdered in 2023, double from 2022. And the police stations have been burned down, food imports through the ports are chaos, and mass hunger and famine are predicted. And this all presents, of course, for the United States and the Biden administration, which I want to get to later, you know, a catastrophic situation, another Gaza-like situation. But let's go back, because I think Barbecue, you know, is using this rhetoric that I'd like you to kind of break down. He and Philippe are proclaiming themselves as armed revolutionaries. What are they, and what is that about?
Well, in the case of Barbecue was a policeman. Barbecue is maybe the most articulate gangster. He ragrouped some gangs, and he presented himself sometimes as a nationalist leader. But in practice, you know, his gang violates. There is a lot of rape of women, killing people. And so this is it happens also. Remember what happens in Liberia, what happens in Democratic Republic of Congo, what happens in Sierra Leone. You have all these guys. I understand they grew up in a poor neighborhood. They have resentment, but also they became gangster because it was one of the few ways that they can accumulate some wealth. In this sense, they negotiate with the political elite, they negotiate with the economic elite, but today they are now autonomous because they are involved in all kind of practices. In the case of Guy Philippe, it's very different. Guy Philippe, I think his father was a major of a small city. He was educated in one of the best schools in Port-au-Prince. He made a military academy in Ecuador. He was, after that, a police officer in charge. And he was involved in a movement against Aristide. He flew to the Dominican Republic. And after that, he re-entered the country when they decide that Aristide has to left. In this sense, you know, when he came back to Haiti, he had to use vehicles. And so there is 2 points where you can. It's not a guerrillero. It was a guy who arrives and at a moment to get in charge. But they stop him immediately after he has done the job and after Aristide was expelled from Haiti. After that, he went to this small city, and for the DEA, he was involved in drug trafficking because his connection in with Colombia, with Venezuela, with Ecuador, and he pled guilty when he was arrested in Haiti. They bring him to the States. I think his wife, or I don't know if she's his ex-wife, his wife or his son are living in the States. And so Guy Philippe, when he came back to Haiti, he presented himself as victim of US imperialism, as he was not involved and he was a nationalist leader and we want to take the country back. He will solve the problem of violence. He will be the new chief of the country. But he tried, but for the moment, he didn't have a lot of support. Certainly, he has people who support him because in this chaotic situation, people want the problem to get solved. But he represents essentially himself.
And does Guy Philippe work with Barbecue now? Or is this, you mentioned that they're in control of different aspects?
They are in negotiation. I don't know if they work together, but Guy Philippe said, okay, if you help me to take the National Palace, and if I became a president, I will give a general amnesty to all these people involved in the gang, in the assassination, in the rape of women, in the violence in it.
So how do you, this is a pretty dark picture, but of course that's been the history that we've seen. You mentioned from the time of the earthquake, but we could even go, you know, further back. And certainly since in 2004, when Aristide was taken out, forced out of the country, and then came back, and his government had become corrupt when before that it had produced some hope. In fact, it just seems that one after another solution is never a solution. And I've listened to some of the people, who from the Montana Accords and elsewhere, who say that's because it's always an imperial solution and not a Haitian, one from Haiti itself. And you mentioned that the last time we spoke, Franz, that there were groups on the ground who do have ideas about what to do, but the situation has deteriorated since then. So I guess my question to you is how you see the present, and especially given that Haitians are now facing hunger, that, everything is broken down. I don't know how much of the economy is working, if at all.
No, there is two problems. First, Port-au-Prince. And the other one is the province. The province, the gang doesn't have control or total control. They can intervene, but they have limit. Port-au-Prince, it's a very particular situation, peculiar situation. Because of the topography of Port-au-Prince, they control all these non-edificant places, and they are all around. And so the road to the south can be blocked, the road to the north can be blocked, the road to the center. Yeah. And in this sense, this is a structural problem, that we have migration from the countryside for the last maybe 40 years or 30 years exactly. And these gangsters are the sons or grandson of people who migrate. They don't have the traditional culture of their parents. They grew up in a difficult situation. And as it happens in Africa, when we talk about young soldiers, they can, the men gangster can offer them the possibility with drugs, with arms, with alcohol, and I can say also it's a particular violent situation when you have a lot of rape, a lot of violence against women, certainly against men, but against women. And so this, with the money of the kidnapping, someone said, I think the last 3 months, that maybe that $25 million, US dollars, just for the kidnapping, that people who pay ransom, they have control. Certainly people who have business paid them some ransom as a mafia. And also they get involved in the drug business. Not that Haiti export drug, but the drug can stay in Haiti and bring to Dominican Republic, because with 10 million tourists, you have the possibility that the drug reach United States, Canada, or France. And for example, the Hells Angels are a small town where they were established their headquarters in Dominican Republic. But these gangs with their arms, with their ammunition, and with a police who is not very effective for one place. Secondly, with the police, a force where a lot of them are involved with the gangs. And so this is the situation who gives them the possibility to control the city. But we have to think also, the Biden administration, when they have the problem of migration, they said we offer 50,000 visa. Temporary visa on the Biden program for the Haitians. But this is a program where you have to apply online. That means that the middle class who benefits from these programs, half of the General Hospital of Port-au-Prince left with this program. 1,000 policemen left. And essentially, for example, the University, Kiskeya University, they said half of his teachers and half of the students left to this program. That means the problem what we have with the Duvalier regime at the time when most of the intellectuals, professional technicians left the country to go to the United States, to France, or to Canada. And so Haiti, there is the qualified people left. A lot of enterprise people, technicians left because for them it's a possibility to escape this kind of situation. It's a possibility because they have kidnapping women, priests, sisters. Anyone has been kidnapped in this process. Doctors, a lot of doctors have been kidnapped. And so you don't have, it's a very complex situation where hospital began not to function anymore. And so now today we saw that the personnel of the United States, of the United Nations, of Canada have left. And so in the same time, you are talking about a commission, but this commission doesn't have any power. This commission doesn't have any material means to function. And so we are in a situation where, and I said this architectural institution model that won't function. I'm sure that, and they will say in the press or the global press, look, we have done everything, but the Haitian can't function. They can't have a compromise to solve the problem. But this kind of this institution, the design for them, I don't know how they will function.
You brought up so many points, Franz, and one of them, of course, is this problem of migration. And I think, you know, you could, you know, if, as you just said, there's been a brain drain. Obviously, if people can't function and there's tremendous violence in the street and violence against women, the incentive to stay is just not there. But on the other hand, the history, especially the current history of policy toward Haiti, seems to be more geared toward preventing migration of Haitians to the United States. And that's been a significant factor. And we see that, you know, now Chile is having the same problem. There's been a lot of Haitians that went to Chile, a million Venezuelans, and it affects the politics of the country. And nobody's, it's almost as if everybody's just giving up on Haiti. And as we know, military solutions have not worked. Foreign intervention has not worked. We're back to the first question. What can be done? Is there something that can be done? But also, could you comment further on this issue of the effect of the outward migration of Haitians?
You know, years ago, we published a book and I made the translation. The book was it by Josh DeWayne, Haitian American economist. And the name of the book was Aiding as Migration. And he said, the book was published in 1987. He said the policy of United States and the international community will finally come with a massive migration of Haitians. Because at the time, it was a neoliberal policy. They don't want to reinforce the state. And what you have, it was for the last 30 years, massive exodus of people. And so people first, they leave United States, Canada, but after the earthquake, a lot of people move to Mexico, to Brazil, and to Chile, because at the time Chile opened its doors with Bachelet when she was president, and when Lula was president, they opened the door, that's Haitian migrants went there. And people begin to, it happens also in Central America, in Salvador, in Honduras, in Guatemala. with the violence, with the failed state. And so people began to move. Now in Chile, they have the problem of manpower. Haitian began to left Chile and to left Brazil, and they go through Darien jungle, wow, pass to Central America. Remember that the United States put some pressure on Central American government to control these migrants. But these migrants, and the government knows that if they accept the people to settle in their country, they won't receive. They have to deal with these migrants. And so I think they decide to let the people go. I make some, and when they arrive in Tijuana, recently my friend Margarita Vargas was teaching at the UNAM. She made a book on the Haitian migrant in Tijuana. When I was teaching in Mexico, and when I was living there in 1975-77, there was maybe 500 Haitian students, maybe 100 professionals was studying in Mexico and was settled there. Today we are talking about thousands or more than 10,000 people. Not only that, people who are in Tapachula with the border with Guatemala, not only with the people who are in Tijuana, but also a lot of them go across to the Rio Grande, but they send them to New York. And from New York, the governor sent them to the Canadian border. Generally, Canada has only one border, except in the Arctic, where they have border with Denmark. The other border was with the United States. And in the last 40 years living in Canada, I never saw any migrants. And so you have thousands of migrants who begin to enter in Canada through Works Farm Road. And so this is a new, when we make interview with the people, you know, it's incredible that people has traveled from Brazil to the Darien jungle. The Darien jungle, it's one of the terrible jungle. I know this place. And they have made some, I remember the French television made a series on the Darien jungle, and the people came with, the guy said, when I came with a lot of people with protection, but that's 15 days in the most terrific jungle. We have history, horrific history of rape, of violence, of people who, and so these people arrived there, but most of the people we interview, they were people from small towns, peasants who sold their land, who to travel. And it's very different from the Biden process. The Biden process supposedly was directed to these people, but most of the people who came on the Biden visa was people from the middle class, professional and technician. It happened the same thing during the Duvalier regime, where most of the people, and I understand them, they don't have the possibility to continue to live in this chaotic situation. And so this will be a problem for Haiti to rebuild the country. And I remember when we have this earthquake, there was one Haitian scientist, Dr. Samuel Pierre, we organized in Montreal a meeting. 700 Haitian people involved in community action, people, scientists, Haitian scientists from all over the world. We published a book, some kinds of the paper to say this is a book. We make an assessment of the situation in Haiti, and It was people from Haiti and from the diaspora. And we said, we can help rebuild this country. Everybody paid his own ticket. They came by themselves. They get involved in commission. It was a collective work. And the international community involved in Haiti, they said, great. But 2 months later, they decide that they don't use this project. They don't make support for this kind of project. Some of them, Dr. Pierre continued, he built a university online and with some place in Haiti where all the people involved in university in the States, in science, try to build classes from directly with Zoom, with yeah. But we didn't receive any support from any government or international government. I think the people want, they don't want to help solving the problem. They want that if they don't talk about Haiti, Haiti, the problem doesn't exist. I think it happens in Israel, it happened in Palestine, when the people said, okay, if you don't talk about the problem won't exist.
But except that it festers, as we know, and then erupts. And that's so what we're seeing.
It erupts in violence, it erupts in migration, it erupts, and it can disturb all the places.
Right. So let me ask you, because this is an excellent overview, and we get the situation of so many people leaving the country and going everywhere, you know, or trying to get outside the country. But, you know, in the United States, we're in a political season, election season, and Trump and the Republicans are seizing the question of the border. They're calling it an invasion. Of course, we know it's racist and it's overtly racist. But on the other hand, the Democrats are caving in a way. And so Biden is talking about tightening at the border and deporting people. So we've seen Haitian immigrants who make it to the border getting deported back to Haiti. Mm-hmm. And so it seems that, you know, even though we began talking about this transitional council, that they're trying to come up with some form of governance for Haiti, this is the root problem. And I don't know if you have, you know, some solution in mind, or some, you know, if you've heard people inside who can have come up with better ideas.
I think the solution is not one. First of all, the departure of Ariel Henry, it's a good news. It was necessary, but it doesn't solve the problem. Secondly, the migration process, people will continue to migrate, not only to the United States. I discovered last year, I was in Paris in January to give a class. I discovered there were 17,000 people living in Turkey, 17,000. I don't think they moved to Turkey to live in Turkey. I think they moved there to try to enter in Europe. Now you find Haitian diaspora in every part of the world, even in Russia, because people has no choice. They move where they can. But in the same time, if we don't solve the problem, we border Dominican Republic. And so I talked to people from the organization of World Organization. And so people said, listen, we have the problem of cholera. Cholera came with the UN forces, but they never recognized that. They never paid any kind of money to the 9,000 people who died, or to the 90,000 people who get affected with cholera. Secondly, with the problem of today, there is no sewage, no water system. There is no drugs available because of the hospital are closed, the attack hospitals. And so what will you will have a global problem Dominican Republic is nearby. The virus, the bacteria, they cross the border. They don't need visa. And right. So you have 10 million people as tourists in Dominican Republic. That means that people from Europe, from the United States, from Canada, they can get affected. And so we are in a situation where it looked like Gaza, but it's not for the same reason, evidently. But you have the problem of today and in a few days, you can see, okay, they said they will organize dropping to from air to give foods. But what you will have, that the people who will have access and who have access to arms, that the people who will benefit from this kind of airdropping of foods or medicine. And so we are in a very, very, very sensitive situation, a human disaster, but you need to solve the problem politically in the same time. If you don't have a vision to solve the problem politically, you won't solve the problem at all.
And how do you imagine this political solution coming about? Because we've talked about, you know, this council now that is trying to create, a transitional council, a political council, and it's got some of the usual suspects, you know, Martelly and Claude Joseph and Aristide's party, but also this huge grassroots coalition that you mentioned, the Montana Accords. Is there anything that comes from there that would have any legitimacy?
I don't think so. This is my opinion. You will have a problem. I won't say.
And then what about the other side with Guy Philippe and Barbecue?
The other ones will put pressure with arm on this political process. They will put some pressure on them.
So it's like a stalemate.
I think so.
Oh, all right. So in that case, then we don't know. We can only just watch the news and hope that there will be.
And hope that the situation will be better in the next week.
When they try to do something. Well,
okay.
Francis, always thank you so much.
I
try to end on a notion of hope usually, but this time there doesn't seem to be much hope. But I hope I can call you again in the next few weeks and we'll
see
what happens.
Thank you, Susie.
Thank you so much, Franz. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Well, thank you so much, Franz Voltaire, for bringing us the clarity that's possible, I guess. Franz is an award-winning filmmaker and historian, author and publisher, and he's founder and director of the Montreal-based International Center for Haitian, Canadian, and Afro-Caribbean Culture. He has written many books. He's done films. He has been a member or consultant either to the UN or previous Haitian governments, and he was also in Chile in the Popular Unity period. And I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Franz. That's our show for today. I'd like to thank my guest, Franz Voltaire. Thanks to executive producer Robert Brenner, producer-director Melissa Figueroa, editor Juliana Gotha, and Eric Baca in Master Control. You can listen to this and other archive shows as well as subscribe to the podcast at kpfk.org. Click Audio Archives and scroll down to Beneath the Surface with Susie Wiseman. More information on programs and guests are on our Facebook page. That's Beneath the Surface with Susie Wiseman. And you've been listening to Beneath the Surface on KPFK, Pacifica Radio for all of Southern California and beyond, streaming live and archived at kpfk.org. And if those of you who tune in just for the archive show had problems last week, that was because the archive didn't catch up with daylight savings, but it has been fixed now, so you can get this show at the KPFK archive. Please stay tuned. I'm Susie Wiseman, and thanks for listening.
The Pacifica mission statement
is to establish a foundation
organized and operated exclusively for educational purposes,
to encourage and supply outlets for the creative skills and energies of the community,
to engage in any activity that shall contribute to a lasting understanding between nations and between the individuals of all nations, races, creeds, and color,
to gather and disseminate information on the causes of conflict between any and all of such groups,
to promote the study of political and economic problems and of the causes of religious, philosophical, and racial antagonisms,
to promote the